The following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
Put your name on it. Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Well, I'd like to hear about it, pothead.
Look at the game change.
If you want a battle, it's either that you will or
you won't. You know, you're not a bad-looking man, Mr. Gals.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Bullshit. You didn't convince me. Let me see your real war face.
No, I thought you said that you are right, Spider.
Hey, man!
Stories of Mark Garagos.
It's an interesting story. When I was growing up,
I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah, okay. My mom used to say, it's Garagos rhymes with asparagus. Okay, she says the only word in the English language rhymes with asparagus. I named my daughter Tenny Rose. Tenny Rose did not like the sound of Tenny Rose Garagos. So she made it more alliterative and said Tenny Rose Garagos. And she's changed the damn name.
I like Tenny Rose Garagos. It's very rhythmic. Like it's a great meter, like Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and she's a force of nature. She's a lawyer, third generation now, and she just finished back to back trials in New York and won them both. So she's quite a stud.
Do you sell it when your child wants to be a lawyer, knowing how much work that is? Is that anybody's passion? Is that anybody's?
For her, it's beyond. I mean, she's a force of nature. If you saw her, she works for one of my closest friends in the world, Ben Brofman. Ben was the lawyer on Dominic Strauss-Kahn. He's the lawyer that represented Diddy, Johnny Cochran's last criminal case back in 2000 for when Diddy and J-Lo got into that thing in the nightclub and Plaxico Burress. So she's got Plaxico. She's got a great practice there with Ben Brofman, and she does very well.
Tenny Rose, hello. Tenny Rose Garagos.
There you go. Very good.
She should have slid the S. Yes. Tenny Rose Garagos.
So the question is, I've got two kids. I've got Tenny, who was destined to be a lawyer, and I've got Jake, who wanted nothing to do with the law.
So we'll call him less loved.
Yes.
He's your Danny Baldwin. What does he do?
Jake is a chef in New York as we speak, and he's at a Michelin one-star restaurant, and he's doing spectacularly.
Jake, what's up, buddy? You're a huge sports fan. The only reason I asked real quick, I'll circle back to that, was about it being somebody's passion. Could you see, Injustice for All, like, you're out of order, this whole trial's out of order. You see these great speeches in the movies, but the minutiae, like in your book, was it Mistrial?
Mistrial, right.
Your book Mistrial, you did a really great job of just going, this is a grinded, glacial-paced machine with so many earmarks and red herrings and everything.
It's why one of the things I realized early on, I mean, for many years it was just me and my old man. And in fact, when I was growing up with him, I was conceived the same month that he went into the L.A. County DA's office. First 13 years of my life, he was a hard-charging prosecutor and a curmudgeon like you would not believe. And I thought my first name was Dumb and my middle name was Shit, because that's all he ever called me.
Hey, Dumb Shit.
Exactly. Dumb Shit. I'll never forget when one time he used to get us up on Saturday mornings, because he always wanted us to do chores, and it was me and my two brothers. And I'll never forget, he used to come into the room at about 7 o'clock, 7:15, and start searching your room. And, you jump right out of bed. You can't do that! Fourth Amendment! And he would just laugh. One day in Mike's room, he found a little film canister filled with weed. And Mike's excuse was, I was holding it for some other guy. And my father said, do you know how many guys I put in state prison for
that old gag?
For that old gag, yeah. Getting pulled over for a DUI and saying, I just had two beers.
Or and a half. There's so many tells I've been
I can't tell you how many police reports I've read where the guy said, I just had two beers.
Yeah. Don't you think, like, with DUIs, like, you can't bring a gun, no matter what type of gun it is, on an airplane, you're out. No matter what the size, shape, scope, caliber, if you have put your lips to an alcoholic beverage, you cannot get in a car. It'd be
you're done. Well, there was, old school was that if you got, look, when I first started practicing, they had just gone from, there was no legal limit, blood alcohol, to a 0.15. Imagine that, 0.15. Then it went to a 0.12, to a 0.10, to a 0.08. Okay. I've watched it. And at a certain point, they were actually talking about going to a 0.05, which at that point, it's just a zero tolerance. Because
people listening have knots in their stomachs right now, like, oh, no.
Yeah.
this crew.
What would you say your listener base is? What's your demographic?
I would say I would say 60% Orange County. There's a million subscribers. That's what's great about podcasts. The million subscribers.
Well, yeah. I've got a, you know, Reasonable Doubt.
Reasonable Doubt's a great podcast. Right. That's top of my page. Reasonable Doubt podcast with Adam Carolla.
We have a lot of fun with that.
You sound like Penn Jillette. Has anybody ever told you that?
His wife has told me that, too.
Well, there's your end.
Exactly.
But you... Yeah, Reasonable Doubt podcast. I like it a lot, and I love that you and Adam, you call a spade a spade. If you guys disagree, you disagree, and it's just so rare to hear people listen to each other. And you're a great listener. Like, when I've had conversations with Penn Jillette, speaking of, he's an atheist and I'm a Catholic, we listened, and it didn't degenerate into that, like,
if we had done this yesterday, you would have had the ash on your forehead.
No, you know, that's just sort of...
Are you on Lent?
No, that's a little too spooky. That's a little too spooky. The
Armenian Lent, we start 2 days early because we're slow, so we got to catch up. But we start on Monday, Sunday night at midnight. So
okay,
and I Lent every year, not the least of which is because the liver is the only organ that will regenerate.
And good job.
So for 40 days, buddy, you can regenerate the liver, and then I'll do some serious damage after that. You know who actually? For your Orange County listeners, for those
I didn't give you the full. Australia, there's a bunch. Europe, I would say it's, if I was going to pick one place where they're the most, would you agree, Orange County in LA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long you been podcasting?
4 years.
No.
What's that now? Say what now?
Six years.
What episode number is this?
I don't know.
I'm asking a lot of questions.
No, it's fine. I like it. I don't know. It's just five,
it'll
four.
Be 4:30.
I used to do two a week, and then
at one a week.
Yeah, it was too crazy. Well, you seem to attract guys that are targeted for shakedowns.
Mm-hmm.
Not you don't attract them; they just know if that's happening.
That's why I find this whole movement that we're in right now so fascinating, because I've been doing this for.
When Al Franken got popped, I went, without knowing anything, I went, that's actually impossible.
Yeah,
I worked with him for 2 years. I don't like him. And it's impossible. I mean, how do you know? And I'm a feminist. Like, what if he didn't do it? What if he did do it? Should be the first question, always. But with him, I went, all right, this is kooky. I'm glad Mr. Rogers isn't here to get hit.
This idea, you can't see what we're doing, but that joke.
He had his hands on a sleeping airman, it was a woman, boobs in flight. But you know, from USO tours, there's always a colonel standing right next to you. It's like a big gag. You're never alone with soldiers, especially if you're a comedian. They're not going to trust you guys.
Let's see if I can find something.
The reason I asked you that is, you know, like Chris Brown specifically stood out to me. Like, it just seems he was a target.
I feel bad for Chris in a lot of ways. I've represented him.
You
for
were like
10
a dad
years.
To him. You said,
"Yeah, I am."
But it went from uncle to dad. So you
know,
guys got
you know, that's true. Actually, that's a very astute observation. Here we go.
We're like an uncle and a nephew, and then a couple years later, you and Adam Carolla holding Dr. Drew's boobs, a la Al Franken.
That's on Christmas Day. So that shows you
what a present. Hottest man in the world, Dr. Drew.
Right.
But you said something when you were talking about Chris Brown, and you said, I've been his attorney for 8 years. It was an old YouTube clip I saw. And I was like, if you have Mark Garagos as your attorney for 8 years, that's a symptom of a much larger problem.
I have, you know,
in my opinion.
Right. Well, you know, I can say some things, not other things. I currently represent him on civil matters, mostly. I haven't represented him on a criminal matter.
Let's go
beat
by beat here.
Okay.
Who represents you in civil matters? You don't have any.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have any.
Yeah, don't you have civil matters? At a certain point in life,
a divorce.
No, because you always, at this point, for instance, I could tell you.
But 8 years in a row.
Yeah,
now it's,
always
10, 12.
He's always going to have somebody coming after him.
Why?
I'll give you an example.
Is that like a,
how about
no,
this?
No.
Go, is go that perform.
A, I'm on your side. Like, okay. Just consider the source as I point to my heart here. Is that, I'm being really genuine here. Is that a scent certain celebrities give off? Is it like,
no, I think that when you reach,
just go towards them
I think when you reach a certain level of fame or infamy, And there's a difference between fame and infamy, or being famous and being infamous. You end up attracting constant problems. And I'll give you the perfect example, what I was going to go to, and I apologize for interrupting. He performed at a nightclub up in San Jose. There was a shooting at the nightclub. He ends up getting sued by somebody who was at the nightclub. Well, he was performing. He wasn't a promoter. He wasn't doing this or that. He gets sued. There was another case recently at One Oak. Suge Knight got shot, and Suge ends up shooting him.
Again?
Yeah.
And Suge what?
Has sued him. Oh. But I sent a letter, and that got dismissed. So,
Suge, what's up, man?
Yeah.
He well, listens. Suge listens.
I'll give you a
We're
scoop.
We're all down with the row, man.
I'll give you a scoop. Did you read last week where one of Suge's lawyers was arrested for supposedly bribing witnesses?
No.
Okay. So the gentleman was in here yesterday, retained me, and I'm representing him. So because it's the most bogus case I've ever seen. I can't even believe he got arrested.
The lawyer was arrested.
The lawyer was arrested, put in jail, $1 million bail. That's... They were eavesdropping on his and Suge's phone calls out of the county jail, which, by the way, is illegal itself. DA did not file anything, but we plan on contesting it. And
why is it $1 million bail?
$1 million bail.
Isn't
that crazy?
That's exorbitant.
Yeah. And they perp walked him out of the courthouse on top of it. I mean, it's just the whole thing is outrageous. And so the guy was in yesterday. I felt bad. I mean, it's just, that's part of the problem with being a criminal defense lawyer. I was just in Miami and I saw, you remember the legendary lawyer, F. Lee Bailey?
Yeah. Greatest New York Post headline of all time, F. Lee Jelly.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, that's the winner. That replaces headless body and topless bar. For me.
Exactly.
Shorter, the concision.
So Flea, as I like to call him, was talking about.
I never heard that before. I
was on a panel with him, and he was saying, you know, nobody makes money doing criminal law except at a very small and minuscule level. And it's true. But Lee has been disbarred on a case where, this is an interesting little vignette, he represented a guy. The guy gave him stock. The government then said, we want the stock back. They do what's called an asset forfeiture. Lee said, I'll give you the value of the stock when he gave it to me, which was, let's just say, 250 grand. They said, no, we want the stock. He says, the stock's now worth 2 million. I'm not giving you the 2 million.
That's my money.
Right, that's the VIG.
That's my money.
That's the delta.
You're stuttering.
And he ended up going, they put him in contempt. He went into custody for 50 days, and he ended up getting disbarred. He's now living in Maine.
That's why he was disbarred?
Yes. Because he refused.
And he knows the law. He knows, this is
one
of
the smartest, brightest guys you'll ever see. He got up, I watched him last week, get up at 80-some-odd years old. I don't even know. If you Google him, you can tell me exactly how old. 84 years old. You wish your brain operated at the level that Lee Bailey's does.
Probably not.
Yeah, it's... No, I'm telling you. And that's after a couple of
Chardonnays. I want to go down.
Yeah.
A couple what?
Chardonnays.
Oh, good. Chris Brown gets shook down, and that was an actual... The thing I'm thinking of was a very specific, it was kooky and bananas. But then it just seems there seems to be... If I had one recurring arc in your career,
right.
the cyclical repeater... In this office, the recidivist here, to use a lot, is the person that's being shook down.
Yeah.
But Bono is more famous than Chris. On the way up, nobody shook Bono down. If they did, it was quiet. He's also white.
Quiet. He's also white.
Right.
Exactly.
I know that.
And by the way.
But John Legend, there's a lot of black celebrities. Bootsy Collins, there's a lot of black celebrities.
I wish I could answer one of the names you just gave because.
John Legend?
Is he going to do that to me?
No.
Non-disclosure agreements on all of these things. That's why I find
I thought you meant you never heard of Bootsy Collins and John Legend.
No,
that's what I thought.
No,
I won't do that
saying,
to you.
I'm saying the reason you don't hear is because generally somebody takes care of it.
Is that the mistake of just because we keep saying his name? Well, Chris Brown. I mean, is that the mistake? There's times where in my life, maybe somebody completely full of shit, a very nominal fee, not Chris Brown money. I'm tired of saying that name. We get to Mark Peterson and all that goodness. It's just, they're so full of shit. And I fight and I fight. And then it's an attorney like yourself that'll say, you know what? Let's say people start tweeting about this. Do you want this? And it's like, oh, no. Then yes, by all means. Is the mistake of the celebrity to not just nip it in the bud and stay in front of it?
No, I think the mistake is when you, I think, and I advise people this, but a lot of times they don't want to take the advice. I don't think you should, if it's a bullshit case, I don't think you should settle it. I think you just take it and you run with it and you just grind them in the ground. You know, there was many years ago, it was a supermarket. And a buddy of mine, remained nameless, became their general counsel. And they had this awful problem of people suing them for slip and falls. They would claim, oh, I slipped here. And, you know, and they were paying them $7,500 here, $25,000 here, blah, blah, blah. The guy just got a zero tolerance policy. He came in as a general counsel. And by the way, the slip and falls dried up within a year. They were done. Now, people understood.
The slip and fall, it's your own fault.
Yeah.
All you need is one sign, right?
Go. Well, it's a sign. It's just we're not writing checks. We're not nuisance value. And I did a trial in December where they literally said, we'll pay you $100,000 to go away. And I said, no, we're not going to do it. I mean, I would rather go to trial and beat you into the ground, which is what we did. I said, I'll beat you into the ground so you understand. I'm going to give you a beating so that you don't come
back.
That's
Teddy Rose talking.
Yeah.
Teddy Rose, there we go.
Teddy is 10 times where I am. I'm mellowed at age 60. She's full of piss and vinegar at 26.
If you need a new car, everybody, or a pre-owned vehicle, that's what I'm going to go for. You got to go to True Car. That is what's up. I put my name on it. True Car users save on average over $3,000 off MSRP.
I'll pipe in. My brother Mike got a Nissan, what is it, the Xterra? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he saved more than $3,000. Saved $3,200 on True Car.
My man, that's what's up. Over 300,000 True Car certified dealers waiting to help you. You tell them what you wish to pay, assuming, you know, you're not I'll take that Porsche for $8. And you lock in what you want, how you want it, and then your phone vibrates or your device, they call you and they say, hey, guess what? We found it. It's ready. They do all the heavy lifting for you, and it is revolutionary. It's fantastic. True Car. Save time, save money. Never overpay. True Car. When you take a case like Scott Peterson, Reasonable Doubt podcast with Adam Carolla, you got to cut him loose. He's holding you back. Now is a great podcast, and I encourage everybody to go to Podcast One. Get that app that I have on my phone.
We call that the best hour in the universe.
It is the best, and it is really one of the best hours for me.
And people can tell that Adam and I are not only good friends, but we enjoy the give and take. So,
and you're polar opposites.
We couldn't be farther.
It's fantastic
on the spectrum.
When you take a case like the Scott Peterson case, you have to be aware of your name. You know, your name is tied to a guy that's going to trial for, like, murdering a baby.
Yeah, well, let me tell you what happened running up to that case.
Okay.
I was on CNN almost every night talking about that case from January. You know, Lacey disappeared on Christmas Eve. It started to gain traction the week between Christmas and New Year's. By January 2nd or 3rd, the thing was cable wall-to-wall. I was on Larry King every single night doing that show. And, you know, I've been paid by CNN as a commentator for God knows how long. It seems like 20
for my money, beets are an underrated vegetable. Hello. Okay.
That's very good.
Sure.
So then I said something when the body washed up on air to the effect of there's guys in state prison on a lot less evidence than the body washing up where your alibi was. And I got a call from the family, and the family said, you know, they wanted to talk to me. I was wrong, blah, blah, blah. I said, fine, come here, meet with me. I met with him, and I was very impressed with his mother. Jackie, who's now passed away, was a formidable personality. She begged me to go meet with him. I met with him, and I came back, and I told my father, who was then alive and was then my partner, I'm thinking of taking this case. And everybody was against it. I mean, Pat Harris, who actually is running for U.S. Senate now, was my partner then. And he said, Mark, that's crazy. It's a no-win situation. People would tell me, if you win the case, you're a pariah. If you lose the case, your career is over. Shep Kopp, who was with me, said the same thing. My old man said...
Shep Kopp?
Yeah, you know Shep Kopp?
No, which is what a great name. It's like Carlin-esque. Shep Kopp.
Shepherd Sanford Kopp.
Fantastic.
Well, his dad was Quentin Kopp, is Quentin Kopp, who was the only independent state senator in California, Superior Court judge, Board of Supervisors, nemesis of Dianne Feinstein, famous guy up north.
Good.
Came down here, made quite a name for himself. Anyway, they all told me not to take it. My old man looked at me and said, if you are not going to take a case because you're worried about your reputation, then what the hell are you doing practicing criminal law? And
oh, wow.
I still was thinking about it. And then when they arrested him, they replayed this one scene. They arrested him. They're taking him into the Stanislaus County Sheriff's Department. And there's a ring of people out there that are saying, hang the monster, kill the monster, blah, blah, blah. And that made my blood boil. And so at that point, I said, I'd take it. I knew that it was a no-win situation. I did not realize and never thought that they would convict him. I thought I'd get a hung jury. The judge took care of that, and he kept pulling off my jurors during deliberations. I mean, they were out for 9 days. On day seven, they finally, the judge removed the foreperson, and that's what broke the logjam of the hung jury. I never thought I'd get an acquittal, but I thought I could hang it.
My follow-up question was, when you take a case, do you believe the person's innocent? I already know the answer to that is, no, I'm a lawyer. Your job, number two, is you're the only person that can deliver this person an actual fair trial and keep this court on the right rails, or a combination of the two. And let's be honest, it's money. It's your job. It is your sustenance. It's how you eat, your kids, everything. So I'm not saying that negatively. Like you take a case for the money.
I get every case
you take for the money, it's your job.
Not anymore. That's one of the great things about the practice right now. I've done very well.
No kidding.
I pick and choose. Yeah.
Nice.
I take probably 30% of the cases I've got are pro bono. So because
regular Dershowitz.
I just saw Alan also last week.
Well, tell him I said hi.
I will.
So do you, like Scott Peterson, I guess it's number two. Like this guy, he'll never get a fair trial.
Never got a fair trial, but I will tell you something. The A&E did a six-part series on it, and for the first time, I know it's been 15 years, for the first time people who actually watched it said, wow, now I understand why you think there were so many problems with this case. It was the craziest atmosphere I've ever seen. I mean, you have
that's really
interesting. I was picking a jury, and the local TV station had a billboard that they circled the courthouse with that said man or monster, a picture of him, and you'd vote man or monster. And this is the jurors are coming into the courthouse. I'm trying to select a jury. 98% of the jurors said they presumed guilt in that case, which was fine with me. I just said my kind of thought when I was picking a jury is you can be honest with me that you think he's guilty and that you don't like his looks or his smug look or this or that. And I admit it. I said he's a cad just because he cheats, I guess. You know, a lot of people get worked up over that. But at the same time, can you put that aside and give him a fair trial? I had one woman. I just told this story to somebody. I hadn't thought about it for 10 years. Who was about 22 or 23, and she said, she was a psychology student at the local community college. She said, you know, Mr. Garrigus, I understand. I thought he was guilty. I talked to my dad. My dad and I discussed it, and I came here today and said, if this were my brother, would I want him to have a juror like me? And I said, I'd have to put that aside. And I said, that's all I'm asking for. And I go back to the hotel. I was staying at the Marriott. Is that a sponsor of yours by any chance?
No. Okay. I mean, fingers crossed.
Okay. So Marriott, listen to that. I go back and I get back then there were fax machines. So I get a fax from somebody who said, I was just in an internet chat room. This juror, it was the same juror I just questioned, said, boy, I really put one over that dumb shit defense attorney. They're calling me back for the second round and I'm going to fry his client's ass. And she came back on the second round. I found out in the interim that she had a TRO, temporary restraining order, against her boyfriend in that same courthouse, which she had lied about on the jury questionnaire. I confronted her with it. Within 30 seconds, she ran out of the courtroom. But that's where I came up with the term stealth juror. That scares the shit out of me.
That's very interesting. I think it's important for people to hear this, and that's when a juror goes in to, quote, fry his ass, then the job of the prosecutor isn't, hey, Mark Peterson's an innocent. You got it all wrong. He's a good guy. Hey, you got it all wrong. Making me look bad in front of the ladies. It's the backbone of our society is to weed out the, I'm going to fry his ass, before the gavel hits for the first time on the trial. Like, that's your job. Thank God that's your job. So I want to, if I can change the prescription on people's lenses of like, ugh, how do you take a case? Because, hey, you can't in a society with this court system that we have, the judicial branch that we have jurors predisposed to frying his ass.
Check this out. For $5 today, right now, my listeners, more stories, get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for $5 right now. You're going to go to 4hims, F-O-R-H-I-M-S, 4hims.com/more, M-O-H-R. $5 to keep your hair? Have you seen my head? It looks like a par 3 mini putt-putt. 66% of men start losing their hair by age 35. That is a stat that I have done myself. I went from door to door to door, and I just kept looking at men's heads. And I figured 66 out of 100, I've done my job. No, for real, you get hair loss, you notice. And once you notice, it's too late. Guys go to weird solutions. You get that shampoo that runs in your eyes and stings. Next thing you know, you get backaches. You're like, why do I have backaches from shampoo? You don't need any of that. You know what you need? You need no waiting room, no weird doctor visits. Could you look in my hair? 4hims.com, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com/more, M-O-H-R, 4hims.com. Answer a couple questions quickly, and a doctor is going to review and prescribe you what you need. 4hims.com. Maybe you didn't hear me in the beginning. $5 today, right now, a trial month of everything. Get that hair going. Get yourself some great lettuce. That is great. That does not stink at all. ForHims.com/more.
One of the fascinating things about what's going on in the country right now is the fact that Republicans and the right wing have finally woken up to the fact that law enforcement is corrupt. And that is, it's like, newsflash, I've been saying this for 35 years.
Well, everybody's corrupt.
Everybody's corrupt. The whole system is corrupt.
So, yes, let's just expand that. You know what? House painters are corrupt. House painters. Come see me. I'll whoop your ass.
The problem is, this is what the problem is. People come into the courtroom and they assume. There is a predisposition to believe that the prosecutors got no motivation other than to seek justice. They believe that the cops have this idea that they're just there to seek justice and that the system is designed to, you know, get the guilty. And all of those things are patently false. I mean, the system, prosecutors, a lot of times, especially in the federal system, have an agenda because they want to use the prosecutorial process as a springboard for higher office, Rudy Giuliani. They use the criminal justice system for political purposes. And the law enforcement has, when they want to get you, no less than the ex-chief judge of the Ninth Circuit here said, there isn't any person walking around that a federal prosecutor, if he wants you, couldn't come up with 3 violations of the U.S. Code.
It's interesting you said that to me because it seems the problem with cases is they think who did it and build a case around that as opposed to collecting all data and then beginning to put the net out. They go, we think it's that guy, so let's just keep shoveling shit that way until it just looks more and more like it's that guy.
That woman right there who's on the front page of the New York Times there, that's Susan McDougall. People don't remember her, but about 20 years ago, she
18 months in jail, not guilty found after
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Susan was Bill and Hillary
I just literally
Clinton's.
Read it right behind you.
You're saying this guy is really well schooled.
I can't lie to you. You're too cool.
Susan was the erstwhile partner in Whitewater. And I was making the same arguments you hear today about Robert Mueller and the investigation and the Russian investigation and everything else is exactly the arguments we were making back then. Identical. You know, Ken Starr was the independent counsel.
But I don't know what those arguments are, though, because it's as I say, above my pay grade. Like, Whitewater, I don't even want to get into because it's in the rearview mirror. But, like, right now, what you're saying, it's the same thing. I don't know what those things are because there's so much chatter. What's the elevator pitch of what is actually happening with Mueller?
Mueller, what I will tell you is doing is saying that the Russians not only, see, you have to be able to separate. You got to hold two thoughts in your head. You got to be able to say, did the Russians meddle? I think that goes, if you believe all the intelligence agencies.
They're not on trial.
Exactly. So then the question is, did And people keep using collude. Collude is really not the word. It's conspiracy. Is there a conspiracy? And this is the problem that people don't understand. Conspiracy is the easiest thing for a prosecutor to prove. You can prove a conspiracy. I can prove a conspiracy with you. You don't have to know what any of the other co-conspirators were doing. All you got to do is commit one overt act, one act that helped further the conspiracy. Is that Don Jr. meeting in Trump Tower? Because that the conspiracy was to get the sanctions off of Russia, that could be a conspiracy. I'm telling you right now.
Well, that is. That,
yeah, I've been, and I'm telling you right now, I've got cases that I'm defending that have less evidence than what has been publicly reported in the Mueller investigation.
So Mueller is doing, you have to have two thoughts in your head. You have to separate the Russians meddling, which I get because they're not on trial.
Right.
So the other thought is what? So
and by
really,
the way,
there's one thought.
We meddle with them. So, I mean, that's part of what we do.
But there's one thought then, because that's easy to dismiss because right. we're not putting the Russians on trial. So then what is the other thought?
The other thought is, was the campaign, and this is what hit the gravamen of the offenses, was the campaign in a conspiracy with the Russians to get damaging dirt in trade for the relaxation or giving up sanctions? That's what the gravamen of his investigation is.
Why can't sanctions. He prove it right now? Why
oh, he clearly can. This is why when
it's
everybody
just making
says,
sure you loop every single belt loop the, before you cinch it? Or?
I'm telling you, he's working at a breakneck speed. If you saw how they normally operate in the federal system, you had mentioned earlier that I said glacial, and yeah. I put that in the book. That's how they normally operate. I have cases where they get up to the fifth year of the statute of limitations. Client's been with me for 5 years and thinks, oh, nothing else is happening. I said, don't get so cocky. They take that long. That's how the feds operate. So this is the idea that they already got a plea from Papadopoulos, from Flynn, and indicted Manafort. And anybody who tells you, like Ty Cobb keeps saying, who's the lawyer for Trump.
It's so that, weird. His name is Ty Cobb.
Yeah, I know. Right.
And then his partner, Ricky Henderson.
Yeah.
Amari Stoudemire, your witness.
Right. Who just signed with the big
I know. Three. That's my first thing I was going to ask you, but okay. I still so got to, maybe I the, owe that circle
the
back.
The fact that Manafort has not pled nor had a trial. It tells you this case is nowhere near, and this investigation is nowhere near being done. And also,
hold on. You said, and thank you for being patient with me and my Luddite knowledge. You said there is already so much evidence.
What's publicly
so? If I'm
right
Mueller
now,
and
right?
I have all the belt loops, and I can cinch the shit out of these jeans right now, why not?
Because he's waiting. That's what the feds do.
For
Manafort to either get convicted or enter a plea and roll.
So if Manafort gets convicted, that behooves Mueller because he'll be because it'll you
because
can't lie in court. You'll be under perjury and it'll incriminate the president.
Because at sentencing, if Manafort's got two choices, if he gets convicted, well, if he's acquitted, great. But if he's convicted, then he's got two choices. The sentencing guidelines will call that he goes away for life. That's what the guidelines were. And trust me, some federal district court judge will do that to him. So he's got a choice at that point. Do I cooperate? Do I then roll on somebody higher up?
Between being found guilty and sentencing.
Correct.
Then okay. And the charge that he'd be found guilty of specifically would be what?
Doesn't matter.
I'm asking.
So, I mean, oh, what he's charged
to go
with.
For life.
It could
it
be
matter.
Money laundering. Well, the money laundering counts are
yeah,
off
it's
the charge.
Yeah, a lot of dough. The feds don't like when you mess with the fucking money.
Oh, my God.
When I was a kid, I asked my dad why guys go to jail for life for counterfeiting. He goes... this is the one time he like sat me down. He goes, it affects the entire. It's like, all right, he's a middle class guy.
It's one of the reasons why Bitcoin has got a real fight for it, because that Bitcoin literally challenges the fabric of the societies, world, global. So,
have you ever had a client that you mid trial got the creeps and really were spooked? Like, oh wow, I misread this person.
I had the opposite.
You've never had that happen. In
no,
your entire
usually,
practice.
No, because... No,
you're never
because,
alone with Scott Peterson and went, yikes.
No, I had the opposite.
Okay.
So literally the opposite.
Did he kill her?
Two cases. No, I don't think there's any way that he did.
You're too... Wow. You've been through every piece of data.
I will tell you,
so
I was
withdrawal.
There for a year. I lived this thing.
No, I know.
I spent 50
That's why
years
I,
of alcohol
just,
therapy on this case.
I zipped my lip because I'm...
Well, I used to joke that I would go to the gym every morning in San Mateo when we were in trial. And I'm a fairly friendly guy, and I knew most of the people that were in the gym. And every day, and it was always white professional females. And they would ask me a question. They'd say, I know this guy's guilty, and they'd tell me this. And I'd say, no, that's not true. And then they'd go, well, I know he's guilty, and they'd tell me this. And I said, well, actually, this is what happened in the courtroom. And then I go through that, and then finally they default to, I had an ex-boyfriend that was just like him, and I could see he would do it. And that
do you have to show the court an idea of who did kill her then?
No, because the reasonable doubt is the prosecution's got to do it. My problem was that people had assumed, jurors had assumed, and there were stealth jurors, and the three at least made it onto that jury. I was able to catch some, but not all. And it's a horrific situation. I think at some point the case will get reversed. You know, it's been 15 years.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath on that.
No, I think it will. I think it
will. There's a lot of people in jail, that, you know, a lot easier to clear the decks with a lot of different folks, I think. What's the one case you wish you had where you went, oh, my God, I would have gotten that guy off or that gal?
And I've talked to him, and he's still a current client, is Mike Tyson. I wish I had done Mike Tyson's rape case.
He's a beautiful man.
Yeah.
I love Mike. Hey, that's for the listeners, like, that's for real. I love Mike. Yeah, Mike's so a beautiful person.
Mike
knows all of his demons and puts them all on the table. And that was the outlying situation where he goes, no. And I'm with you.
And Mike's wife, Kiki, I just adore. He got jobbed on that case. I joked with him in the past. It's a lot of things he did that he could have gone down for.
Yes,
that
was and he's very honest about those things.
Absolutely.
You know, mugging old ladies as a kid, all the way through. Lee Harvey Oswald, how did Jack Ruby get into the garage that day?
That's a very good question.
As Dennis Miller has a joke, he goes, "You gotta love the fact Lee Harvey." He goes, if I seem out of it tonight, forgive me. You'll enjoy it. If I seem out of it tonight, forgive me. It's finally sunk in that Zemed has replaced Terrio in Dance Fever. He goes, Zemed, there's a hoofer, huh? Everything choreography, that's stiff since the Lee Harvey Oswald prison transfer. Don't you love the fact that Jack Ruby got into the garage that day? Hey, boss, the guy that owns the local titty bars here with a handgun, should I let him in? Yeah. Who the fuck were they turning away? That's the whole joke. It's like... my mind, it's like doing a K-turn on the 405. It's like, what? Like Adrian Zemed, Danny Terrio, Dance Fever, Lee Harvey Oswald, Kennedy assassination, Jack Ruby. Like, wow. There's smoke coming out of my head right now. I don't give a fuck about politics. That's a grandmaster comedian. How did Jack Ruby get into the crash?
I have no idea, but did you watch Bill Walton last night? He may know.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, you ain't lying. You? People are just surrendering to the greatness. Finally.
I've never seen anything as
that's
astonishing.
That's Steve Jobs right there.
Steve Jobs Mozart!
Sacrifice of goat, the sun gods. Jack Ruby, if you're young, killed the guy that they tried to pin the JFK killing on. And it's very famous. You can go on YouTube and just type in Jack Ruby, and you will see a man in a giant white cowboy hat. He stand and they're walking Oswald in, and before he can go, I'm just a Pat, he goes, hey, Oswald, and shoots him right in the fucking ribs.
Yeah.
In front of, and like no sheriff takes their gun out and goes, whoa, blah, blah, blah. Just, if you did that today, you would be Swiss cheese. You take out
I don't know. I find it interesting. The Florida shooting, how does that kid get into custody?
But
you explain that to me.
Let's do this first.
Okay.
If you walk into a court, jail underneath the court situation like that.
Yeah.
Today, and you took out a 9mm and said, hey, and you went, they hear, bah! You would hear immediately, bah, 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 bah.
That's absolutely true.
Jack Ruby died in jail.
Yeah.
He couldn't talk.
Yeah. There was no way they were going to let him talk.
No. Did you read the book, I Heard You Paint Houses?
No.
It was Jimmy Hoffa's like best friend, Big Red or whatever, and, was the first thing Hoffa ever said to him. Painting houses is a euphemism for killing people because you get blood on the walls, you paint the house. And he just, it wasn't a deathbed confession, just super methodically lays out where Hoffa is, how he died, who killed him, because he was one of them. And in like the middle of it, JFK, like just Giancana and the guys, just completely a sidebar in this great book anyway about Hoffa. You're like, oh, Hoffa's not in the fucking Meadowlands. He was incinerated in some house. And like, he takes the author to the house. He explains it in such detail. They would have to be an other level insane person to come up with that and have all his facts in order.
Right, and have everything, all the boxes checked.
Yeah,
I have a familiarity with
that. And I'm going to put your book, Mistrials, up on jmoore.com. And if I may, the best way you can help this podcast is by going to jmoore.com and do your Amazon shopping. Just click through my site. They just want to know where their traffic comes from. You love sports. I looked at your Twitter page, and you retweeted that Amari Stoudemire is joining the Big Three.
I think the Big Three is...
Why do you give a shit?
Of the Big Three?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm a stakeholder. I do legal work.
There you go. No.
Okay.
The first one.
Yes, stakeholder.
The rest goes out. And we can fist bump, too.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the reason. No, that's the reason. Just stop.
What they put... I'm telling you, I think it's
you have to.
Game.
You're a stakeholder.
Yeah, I don't want to see fucking Stromile Swift play if basketball. I didn't like him.
The coaches are better than the players.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Did you see Al Harrington last year?
The coaches were better than the players.
Well, look, I'm partial to Dr. J and Clyde. Charles Oakley went out and played.
Me and you could play the other two spots.
Oh,
they dominate. I don't give a shit about...
Why don't we do a celebrity 3-on-3?
Because I can't put the ball in the ocean. My ex-wife said, you can hit an 88-mile-an-hour fastball or curveball. You wrestle at a state level. You can't hit a free throw. I go, I know. It makes me insane.
Did you play ball?
In the driveway as a kid. Like, it's just...
No, you didn't play high school or college?
It's the same season as wrestling, so I always was wrestling.
You were a wrestler?
Yeah.
What weight class?
105, 128, 135, 135, 135.
No kidding. Yeah. Did you wrestle in college?
I tried to, but you have to be enrolled in that college. And that includes...
Did that require grades?
Yeah.
To keep you active?
As Sinatra says, I think, in Live at the Sands, I think they gave me a diploma to make sure I didn't come back. Here's a diploma. Get him out. And my father, a Rutgers graduate, what's the matter with you? You don't want to learn nothing? Mark Aragos, the podcast is Reasonable Doubt with Adam Carolla. Lie detector is not admissible in court.
Correct. 351 of the evidence code keeps it up.
Nobody cares.
Yeah.
You can just say sure.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to go,
like,
according to who?
Right.
According to who? Oh, all right. I like that. Your reflexive nature is just to go, and here's proof.
Well, yeah, but if somebody said, I'm going to try, Your Honor, I want to admit it, I have to give them a citation immediately. So if you take a lie detector and fail. They can't see you right now. You're wearing a robe, and I'm pretending like I'm deferring to you.
There's
like
nothing under the robe, though.
Yeah.
But if you fail a lie detector, is that admissible?
No.
If you voluntarily take a lie detector and pass, is that admissible?
No.
So then why does anybody agree to ever take one?
I have no idea.
Because I think I could beat one. I've been told by many attorneys, it's infallible. You'd have to be a psychopath. I said, I'm an alcoholic. I am a psychopath. No. I've had an alternate reality my entire life. All I do is lie. I could absolutely beat a lie. Is your name Jay Moore? Right. John Ferguson Moore at birth. I picked up my wife's maiden name as an extra John Ferguson Cox Moore. Like, already the thing's going off the charts, and they're like, he's out. He's being...
Have you ever done one?
No.
There's a guy here in L.A., Jack Tremarco. Jack used to be the head of the FBI's Central District.
Right-hand man of Shep Cop.
They know each other. You want to have Jack on and do a podcast where he gives you the lie detector.
Yes, I do. Very much so. Yeah. Can you beat a lie detector on purpose?
Can you?
Without being a psychopath.
Yes, you can. Without being a psychopath.
I'm certain. At least, what is beating it being deceptive?
Yes.
That's it. Yeah, okay.
But they can detect... A really good polygraph examiner can detect stuff. I've always said that a really good polygraph examiner, and this is where Jack and I would disagree, I'm sure, is more effective at getting somebody to make certain admissions prior to actually administering it, just by...
Well, it's being intuitive, I agree with
intuitive
you.
Intuitive and doing it as an interrogatory and...
Very round Lombard Street fashion.
Yeah.
I love how you think. Yeah, absolutely.
That's
all I do.
and that would be interesting.
The valet goes, all right, I find I get everybody people just tell you shit.
Right.
There's two things you can just say to somebody and they just begin to open. They want to tell you things. if they're that type of person.
You know, I do that like, with cross-examination. No
fortune teller.
People always think for cross-examination, you got to come on, you got to beat the shit out of me.
No,
this
we're answer. Friends. No, no, no. You got nothing to worry about.
It's I'm good. Here. This is why you did this. That's why you were there.
Yeah, this is, I get it. I'm the guy that gets you.
Yeah. And dude, I understand, I feel you.
I don't want you to have any anxiety about this. Like, don't, just, this is, it's like Columbo.
Right.
Oh, one more thing. God. One more thing. I remember Opie and Anthony said on the air, we were doing Columbo, because we were timely, I guess, Columbo jokes. He goes, every criminal was like the most white collar ever. Like, Inspector, I'm in the middle of my symphony.
Yeah, exactly.
It was never like, you know, Tampa Ray, who's dealing coke on the side, like, whoa, it's a handball game. Well, we're about to launch our boat from the sloop. Mark Garagos does the Reasonable Doubt podcast, and I know you're going to be frustrated, listener, with the things I did not get to, but they deserve their own time because there's an hour for the very specific discussions that I personally, as a podcaster, would want to have. I'm not even going to say the things out loud because I don't want you to take the bait on any of these because we'll go down a rabbit hole. But I'm aware of them, and they are absolutely things that deserve their own time. So I'm going to ask you this. So lie detectors test... not admissible, but if a bloodhound finds a kid, a dog is admissible.
A dog is admissible.
An eyewitness is the least reliable of those three things, and that's the number one thing we go by.
Absolutely.
I encourage everybody to go on the internet and just eyewitness, test yourself as an eyewitness. You know, there's different ways to do it. Scary. It's not a blue shirt, it's yellow, it's a Chinese guy, not a black guy.
What they don't understand is that, and this is one of the reasons that the Innocent Project has done such good work. They have shown through
DNA. Is that the U2 album, The Innocent Project? Yeah.
That's not a bad idea. So
I was due for one. That's the only reason I kept going.
DNA has proven, and the advent of DNA has proven, the fallibility of eyewitness identification. That's one of the beautiful things. I mean, there's witnesses who are absolutely positive that it was somebody, and DNA has excluded them and has identified the person that actually did it. I have a case about 8 years ago here in Los Angeles where the family came to me. The kid had been arrested for special circumstance murder, which meant he was eligible for the death penalty. It was a home invasion robbery. The mother, I later found this out through the investigation, the mother of my client comes to me and says he wasn't there, tells me where he was. This is before it was commonplace for do the cell phone tracking. So I ordered the cell phone records immediately for his phone. I had an expert fly in from Florida. He did the triangulation of the cell phone towers, and we established where the kid was, and it was exactly where he had told his mother, who was laying tile somewhere in the valley, the place where the...
Was that a Corolla?
Yeah, it was out with of Corolla. Corolla, right. It was at Corolla's house.
Laying tile in the valley.
And the home invasion and the murder took place in Glendale. He was about 14 miles away at the time. And I then later get the interview that the detective did with the mother who was home of the kid who was murdered. And he shows a lineup, and the lineup's got my kid. And the mother says on tape, well, it looks like number two, which was my client, except the guy who did it was older. And the cop says, swear to God, it's in the record, just identify number two. The district attorney won't file the case unless there's other evidence.
You had that on tape?
On tape. Oh. Mother says, also on tape, I don't want to do to some other mother what was just done to me. Take my son away. Cop says, don't worry about it. I'll make sure that there's other evidence. And then I get the tape prior to the prelim. I go to the DA. I said, I've already done the phone triangulation. He wasn't there. You know now that there's a tainted identification. If you walk that mother into this courtroom and have her do an in-court ID of my client who's sitting in his blue jailhouse clothes next to me, you're going to taint this case. And when we catch the real guy, because I think there's DNA in the house, then you've got a problem. She doesn't care, comes in, mother identifies my client, held to answer by this piece of shit judge. We go up to Superior Court, and we finally get the baseball cap that the killer had left. We do the DNA. They get a hit. It's another guy who's in custody at county jail on an unrelated matter. They take the mother of the victim into county jail. They do a lineup now with the real killer. The mother throws up when she sees him because she realized what happened.
How long was your guy in jail?
My guy was in jail for eight months in solitary, 18-year-old kid.
Oh, my God.
And the guy who did the killing, never prosecuted. I was so...
Never prosecuted?
Never prosecuted because she was 100% positive that it was my guy.
She threw up when she saw the guy.
Yeah.
They didn't prosecute after that? I did?
After that.
That's a whole other podcast. I'm so glad. I can't wait. It's like when you discover a musician you never heard, you're like, oh my God, Queens of the Stone Age. Or like, just at random. Like, I hit your podcast like a month ago, and I'm so happy I get to catch up on it. You know what I mean?
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm most impressed with the weightlessness, look, that you carry, that you don't carry, because this is life and death, what you do sometimes. Lives change forever and ever in perpetuity.
In California, in my practice, look, I started in 1983.
Trying to wrap it up, Mark.
Hold on. Can you hold on for a second while I finish this story? Damn, you'd be the worst juror. He'd wheel on me as a juror. I'm giving a closing argument, and the guy's wheeling on me.
I'm sick.
Okay.
Oh, jeez. He's sitting off fire.
Is the kid out of jail? The 18-year-old?
Not only out of jail, I then went to, it was Glendale PD. Yeah. I sued Glendale PD. The city attorney who tried the case, we did in federal court. And city attorney who tried the case did not want, decided they didn't want me as the lawyer. So their brilliant idea was, we're going to call me as a witness. So
that's happened to you before.
Yes.
And one of the things we haven't spoken about.
Yes, yes.
The whole
Michael
thing.
Jackson, very good.
I mean, that's...
So that's what prosecutors you would think would learn, this is not the best idea in the world. So because I'm unchained as on the witness stand. At least as a lawyer, I've got certain things, but as I'm a witness, I don't have to do. So I was on the witness stand. This jury, I was just saying, literally, there's two phases in most civil rights cases. There's a liability phase. Is the police department liable? Then there's I won't get into the details of it, but is the city liable? And then if you find it was malicious, that what the cops did, and oppressive, you can move to a penalty phase, basically, which is for punitive damages. This jury, by the way, every single one of them, never had a case before or after, was a postgraduate. So these were highly intelligent people. This jury jumped the shark. They imposed punitive damages in the first phase, and the judge had to send them back. And then they came back with a multi-million-dollar verdict. Afterwards, I remember two of the jurors coming up and saying, "Mr. Gergis, if you would sue, why didn't you sue the DA too? We wanted to hammer her." I mean, it was unbelievable. And this kid ended
why
up
don't
getting
you?
A couple
money
of
on the table. Months. Go pick it up.
Well, the DA's got all kinds of immunities. Prosecutors, there was a judge, Eidman, who was a federal district court judge here in L.A., who once said, "Being a prosecutor means never having to say you're sorry." And that's exactly
that's in mistrial right. as well.
Yeah.
That's in your book, Mistrial.
Yeah, it's one of my chapters.
Go buy it at jmoore.com. And that weightlessness I was talking about, like these things have to, in the past, weigh on you greatly. But to navigate that to the point where you, what your father said, if you're worried about your reputation, you're an attorney, get out of the business. That's impressive.
I just said,
like you're a happy person.
I am.
When you come in the room, you're like human pot, like Billy Connolly. You know, Penn Jillette's like that Billy Connolly. You're just like, hey, look who's here. Everything's good. Like you meet Shapiro downtown. You're like, ugh.
Right?
This guy, what a sourpuss.
The thing is, when I lose that enthusiasm, passion, then forget it. I won't do this. I'll go sell oranges on the side of the freeway.
Or you could also.
Yeah. Which I wouldn't.
You know what?
It'd be a good job. You know what I mean?
They sell
there,
peanuts. It's
no
August.
Taxes, and fuck the city of L.A. I'm not paying taxes on the oranges that I sell.
The thoughts of Mr. Garagos are not the thoughts of somebody who may or may not have a tax lien against him right now.
Right,
and
exactly.
I just want, for the record, people to know that Jay Moore, the podcaster, just loves paying taxes.
Right, think that was Jay who was talking about not paying his taxes, wasn't it?
They sell, I like when they sell peanuts in August. Cacahuates, yeah, like, yeah. Hey, buddy, why don't you get some Snapples? You'd be a millionaire. Peanuts and flowers. Mark Garagos, Reasonable Doubt podcast. It's a great podcast. I put my name on it. I put my name on the book. Mistrial, you're a good dude, and I would love to have you on again to, I mean, I would like to talk about the Armenian genocide another time.
So would I.
I love world history.
So bring me back in April, which is April 24th, is the commemoration of the genocide. So we'll talk about
that long.
Yeah.
But I will if I have to.
Okay.
You free chocolates. I have one of my own.
I know.
I thought I was done.
Look, he's eating the Garagos and Garagos chocolates. Thank you, you two.
Thank you, buddy boy. Put your name on it.
You got it.
That's the old Herman Edwards.
Said, come baby, you got a license for it.